Hello again.
Hello.
Welcome back.
This is Too Niche. It's the show where we pick a topic and we haul it.
And today we're hauling something very close to both of our hearts, but some may say that yours truly is an expert and a scholar.
I would say you're a high priestess in VPR knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why it is an honor to sit with you.
Thank you.
To speak on the topic. I'm not going to lie, our VPR episodes do really well.
They certainly do. There's a lot of crossover in audience, not surprisingly.
So thought this time around, after we've brought you Vanderpump Rules singles, a Vanderpump Rules city guide, what's next on the roster?
Vanderpump Rules scandals.
Ooh.
So there are many scandals.
A lot. And we really wanted to put a nod to what we may have seen on the show, but then the off-show discourse is sort of where the good stuff has really happened.
True. It moved from being like on the show to then in the later seasons, what's happening off camera.
Yeah, wait, first I want to ask you, Joey asked me this the other day and I was like, why, thank you for asking. He goes, who's your favorite Vanderpump girly? And it took me down a 45 minute road. So I'm just curious what comes to your mind.
Sheena.
Oh.
Because Sheena makes me laugh. Everything she does is really funny to me. And she's just always been that bitch. Like, she's an OG. Sheena's always been Sheena, and she's brought drama. She's maintained like her rank amongst the group, and I genuinely like root for her, and I just like want to see her happy.
I think it's a three-way tie for me.
Mm-hmm.
My first thought was Stassi.
Okay.
And then I thought Kristen. And then I thought Sheena, and then I was like, but then Lala clocks in.
Oh, I thought you meant like current season.
Oh, no, I meant like ever. But I see your Sheena, and yes.
All time, I think Dodie, because she's the ultimate chaos agent.
Yeah.
But now I guess I consider her the Valley, so it's just a different day and age.
Yeah.
But Dodie never fails to bring it.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, she just given us so much.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think Katie, like, I just respect the bounce back post to the scaffolding fall. As somebody whose friend also had a bad fall, I understand the challenge of coming back to life. And so I want to celebrate that.
I mean, imagine falling through a skylight and almost losing your life, only to land on one of the most quintessential reality shows of all time.
And bring very little for a very long time.
But I know, then to still keep your job after 10 years by just kind of being like a sourpuss.
I respect that.
I know.
So I actually think it's like just a well-casted experience.
Yeah, I agree.
Is where I landed after, you know, going through each of them.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have to say? I guess this is, we'll begin our scandals haul. Lala saying on Heather McDonald's podcast that she was nervous about coming into a season with Ariana as the main character because Ariana has never had a storyline on the show. Did you see this?
No, I didn't.
You were in Germany. You missed.
I was in Germany, and truth be told, like, I don't follow a lot of their hijinks like off camera. Like, I don't even know. I probably follow Lala, but I don't check in as much. Like, I kind of go with whatever I'm seeing on the after show or whatever I'm seeing on the show. But here's the thing. When I went on Lala's podcast last year, there was a moment where she asked me, either she asked me or her producer asked both of us. Shout out to Jess, great producer. Shout out to Lala for having me on the show. Asked both of us, is there a person you think is the weakest link of the show? And both of us looked at each other and said yes, but neither of us would say who we were thinking. And my theory, I never even confirmed with her off air, which I should have, but my theory is that we were both going to say Ariana. Little did we know she was about to rise and become the supreme.
Blows my mind.
It is mind-blowing because she hadn't ever really had a storyline. She's kind of the voice of reason, but the voice of reason on a show like Vanderpump Rules is truly like a puddle could be the voice of reason. So like, it's not, you're not doing, you don't have to do all that much to be reasonable in that world. And she kind of was like always a bit of a tertiary character. Like she was like Tom's girlfriend.
Which I think shows like this need. I think sometimes you don't have to be like driving the storyline. It's good to have people sort of in the background commenting, being the sounding board for a scene where somebody else is talking about their drama and they're sort of asking the questions the producers want. There's always a role for that.
True. But I was also like, what is, after going through the first six seasons, which are Criterion Collection worthy, and then going through the Great Depression, which was season 7, 8, and 9, I was looking at season 10, like, we have to step our pussies up and there can be no weak links. Like, it's up to you guys to bring it. And like, you must be willing to put yourselves in the depths of hell in order to make this show good. And she's a person that's never been hell adjacent on the show. So I was kind of like, you're going to get cut if I was calling the shots. Big mistake, because now look where we are.
Look who has a DSW curation.
Also, heavy is the head that wears the crown, because I think it's taken her a while to find her footing this season. Like, it's a bit shell-shocked, it's a bit vacant, but then now in these past few episodes, I'm like feeling like I see who this person is. But it's also, I think Lala's a bit of a sipping haterade and is probably jealous of Ariana's success, because Lala has came to the show to play and to get that kind of success.
See, something to me is happening with Lala. She's either establishing story for next season and she's ready to clock in, or maybe something happened because she unfollowed Andy Cohen.
Whoa.
I know.
Do you think Andy Cohen is like a retaliatory gay who's like, if you unfollow him, you're...
Well, he doesn't follow any Bravo Lebs.
Oh, okay. Well, then maybe that's why his sort of
rule
him.
Of thumb. Yeah. Who knows? But...
Very interesting, though.
It's just something to...
I don't want her to divest from Vanderpump Rules, because she's the only person that like stirs anything up.
She is the only one who realizes that they're on a show.
Yeah, and she goes to work. So if we don't have her, but then again, I'm like, oh my God, you're going to be pregnant. And like, can you really have that kind of like toxicity in your life? Seems stressful.
Sure does.
Please, God, don't let her like quit the show or be fired.
I think there's a world where this is might be Ariana's last season. But then I see...
Maybe Lala is going to get booted to the valley.
That was another scenario.
Do you think maybe all of them would get booted to the valley? Do you think maybe this would be Vanderpump Rules' last season?
I don't think so, because ratings are ratings, and ultimately the ratings have been really good this season for the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a natural progression is to move, sort of maybe have them straddling the line a little bit more next season between VPR and the Valley, and then go full throttle Valley. And then you have the Valley just like living on and on. That's my hope.
Oh, I got some good Valley tea the other day.
Do tell.
Which is that the house that Michelle and Jesse live in is just being rented for them to film in. They don't actually live there. The one behind Chateau Marmont.
Mm. Classic.
I know.
That's some housewives behavior.
But like, we need Lala on VPR. Maybe she wanted to go to the Valley, but Andy said no, and that's why she's mad.
I just believe something is afoot. I'm not sure. I think if all works out correctly, the Valley will continue
until the end of time.
Maybe she's mad that just the reunion went the way it did, because I feel like she's probably about to get like a tsunami of hate for going up against the Supreme.
Right. Or she said, you know what, this is boring, somebody better do something, and went for it in the final, you know, segment,
mm-hmm.
which I like.
No, I like it too. She's out here taking risks.
That's what we need.
She's sticking her neck out for the mm-hmm. greater good.
She has a new child on the way. She needs the paycheck.
Yeah.
I don't think give them Lala bathrobes are going to make any profit unless you're still on the show.
I know. Okay, now I'm stressed a little bit.
Something else that's pretty stressful in the recent scandal of it all is something about her. So if you walk by the Something About Her location on Robertson, it doesn't look like they're in a mid update in order to open. It looks like they've broken down set, and it's probably not happening in that location, if at all. Now, I do find it funny because we did joke on this show that what if Something About Her was just like a grand scheme for merch?
It's possible.
It's possible.
Yeah.
I do also understand that opening anything in West Hollywood is the hoops that you have to jump are endless. So I can see it just being like that location just didn't work out. Also, there was a rumor that has yet to be verified, but that they were going to be doing some sort of ghost kitchen with Uber Eats, which would actually be genius. And I think it's either go the Uber Eats route or partner with not this, but something like a Panera or like, and have a Something About Her menu in some mass chain.
It's giving mass chain energy.
Like, why not? At this point,
it would have been smart, though, to do that while the show, or like, I mean, I guess you could launch it if you're going to do Ghost Kitchen in like the three major markets, like New York, LA, Chicago.
Right.
Launch it when the reunions are airing. So it's like, get your reunion party orders.
Limited time, Something About Her menu.
My read on Something About Her is that Ariana and Katie were trying to think, what do we do after we lose this job? Because Vanderpump Rules was on the way out, and they were like not the most creative, forward thinking individuals. So they decided a sandwich shop called Something About Her would be like their future.
Down the street from Pump.
Yeah. And it was right, just like, right, the, we that. Restaurants are what we know. Like, we just have to stick to this. Like, this a sandwich shop seems like doable for us. And then Scandoval happened and Ariana's life changed drastically, where now a sandwich shop is actually like an annoying thing that she would have to do that would hold her back, and like not something that she would probably want to deal with day to day, and also even like have time to be like around running it. And Katie, on the other hand, has nothing but time to run a sandwich shop. So I feel like therein lies the crossroads.
Mm.
I heard a rumor that I liked the best, which is that Chef Penny had trademarked the Something About Her name.
That's not a rumor. That is a true statement.
But then, like, they can't do anything without, like, Chef Penny signing off. Which, I'm sorry, but, like, if you're getting Chef Penny involved in your restaurant, you're off to a wrong start.
Agree.
Out the gates. Also, it's sandwiches. They're not that hard. Like, I could think of like 10 amazing sandwiches off the top of my head. I don't think you need a chef involved to make a delicious sandwich.
So true. But all this to say, the fate remains to be seen on something about her. And I have a feeling that the brick and mortar, as it was framed within the show, is not a thing.
Because also, I don't know how it works, but if you have like a failed business like that, can't you write it off on your taxes?
I believe so.
So if Miss Glad's having a great year and then doing her taxes, and it's like, would we rather sink more money into this thing that like doesn't align with my priorities? Or do I just want to like shut it down, take the tax write off, and like move on with my life?
And just have t-shirts for sale online.
Yeah.
It would be so smart though if they have if they're able to license it and just be making money off the back end.
Mm-hmm.
That would be cool. And
group
I would
kitchen style.
Yeah, and I'd be really impressed with that.
Yeah, but just I don't know how what kind of savvy businesswomen we're dealing with.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
It remains to be seen. So that's a scandal to me, a sandwich scandal, if I've ever seen one.
Okay, should we just hop around with
these
scandals? Okay, great.
These people just love to get themselves in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wonder if it's like a chicken or an egg situation. Like, is it because they're on Vanderpump Rules and they know the drama serves them, they tend to attract it more? Or are they attracting so much drama that they're on Vanderpump Rules?
I think it's the latter.
They're just innately scandalous individuals.
Mm-hmm. They're incestuous. They're scandalous. They are unscrupulous and just find themselves in pickle after pickle, which is why LVP was like, we simply must have a show about this wait staff.
Yeah. So maybe we start at where it all started, which is Sheena Marie and Eddie Cibrian having an affair when he was married to Brandy Glanville of Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Yes. So Sheena Marie was cheating with Eddie Cibrian. And I think Sheena has had a publicist from the time that this show started. Because also, like, what? No one, literally, beyond no one cared about who she was or anything in 2013.
She had a publicist who had a direct line to Us Weekly.
Yeah. But also, like, Eddie Cibrian and Leanne Rimes were kind of also passé at that point, right? I'm trying to think back to like peak
2013.
Okay, so Sheena found herself dating him while he was still married to Brandy Glanville and having an affair with Leanne Rimes. So yeah. She was the middleman. This is coming off of Sheena's like big hoe era that we're kind of learning about on this season of Vanderpump Rules.
With
like
the John
2008
Mayer.
To 2013, Sheena really got after it. And I like that she aimed high and she was like
in the mix.
Yeah, very in the mix. Sheena says, 7 years ago, I met Eddie and 6 or 8 months go by and I find out that he's married. And I call him out. He lied at first about it. Then he admitted it. So I stopped talking to him for a long time. Then I run into him one night at my work. He comes by and wants to explain himself and ask me out for drinks. He says he's now separated from his wife. Bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. And I'm like, okay, whatever. I'll go with it. But come to find out shortly after the encounter we had, there's a story posted the next day saying he was with Leanne and he was still married. It was just a mess. I ended things there. I stopped talking to him and I've never talked to him again. She says, this is such old news. It was so long ago. Okay, yeah, because I was going to say the Eddie and Leanne thing peaked like in, I feel like 2007, 2008, right?
When did Beverly Hills start? Because I think that was when we were getting the tail end of that whole...
The Eddie Cibrian Leanne Rimes thing lasted for a really long time. Like, the news cycle around it, like, it went on for years.
And I have to say, I'm about to share a really eye roll LA story, mm-hmm. but here we go. Let's go back to the last election. We're in 2019. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's 2018. Marianne Williamson has decided that she might run for president.
Okay.
She hosts a small gathering at a mutual friend's house. I'm invited, where she wants to speak to young minds of various professions to sort of understand the issues that they're interested in.
Mm-hmm.
We go around, we introduce ourselves, we say what we do, we say where we live, yada, yada. Eddie and Leanne are there. When it gets to Eddie, he says, they ask him his profession, he says, I'm a dad.
I like that.
I loved it. I was like, do I love Eddie Cibrian? Yeah, I do. He is so nice, really handsome. And any man at that big age who's going to say that when you ask him what he does, he says, I'm a father. That's really hot.
Mm-hmm. I'm a fan. Okay, so I have a little bit of clarification on the relationship timeline. They got married. Leanne and Eddie got married in 2011.
Oh.
And they met in 2008 on a Lifetime movie set. And they had an affair. In 2009, they ended their respective relationships and started dating. Then they got married in 2011. Beverly Hills came out probably 2010.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it was like at the tail end. And then Sheena would have been in the mix between like 2008 and 2009.
Because this 2013 article was probably timed in correlation with the Vanderpump
premiere.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was just it was years of news about these two.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There also was, Brandy was convinced that Leanne was like copying everything she wore. Did you ever see those montages?
Oh, yeah.
That was a big old visual presentation.
Mm-hmm. And now they're still together to this day.
They're still together. I also was at a wedding and they were both there and they are so nice and cute.
Wow.
But everybody got a little bit drunk and was like, all I can think about is Brandy Glanville. Like to the side. And I was like, same. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a Glanville thing. She haunts and haunts.
She sure does.
Okay, to piggyback on the Sheena of it all, since we're in the mix with her, remember the editing drama where a Vanderpump Rules editor went on a podcast and said that they purposely look for damning footage to embarrass Shishu?
I sure do. And what I remember most about this is this being peak pandemic fodder. And then like 2 weeks later, it all went like to a different level of Vanderpump fodder.
Mm-hmm.
So this was the first thing. And I was like, oh. And the whole synopsis of this is that a Vanderpump Rules editor went on a podcast and proceeded to say that she gave Bo and Stassi the hero edit, while purposely looking for moments where Sheena was acting foolish, and without question, those would end up in the final product.
Mm-hmm. Well, she also said that Sheena is pretty easy to do that too, because she embarrasses herself with her own actions, which is why I love her so much. So yeah, I remember this being like a thing, and then life took a turn and was no longer important.
And the editor ended up getting fired.
Good, honestly.
Yeah.
No one wants to hear how the sausage is made in that way. No,
and it upset me. It made me sad for Sheena. It was a cheap ploy.
Yeah. Keep it to yourself, or just like continue to do it. Like, do your job. Loop me out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And let the work speak for itself.
Yeah.
I don't like I don't like a below the line person trying to become like make a name for themselves.
Yeah, I don't really understand the motivation with revealing that. Maybe just everybody who works on Vanderpump Rules turns into a mean girl a little bit.
Well, I think it's also like people will just go on a podcast and say things without truly understanding that the podcast gets like blasted out to the entire world.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So this is one of those moments, and this editor learned the hard way.
Okay, I've got one that's dark.
Mm-hmm.
But really needs to be highlighted.
Yeah.
Miss Brittany Cartwright. I'm going to take it back to January 15th of 2013. A little tweet of hers saying, "This is so crazy," all caps, exclamation point. "Everyone watch," exclamation point. Hashtag Sandy Hook, exclamation point, question mark. "Who knows," exclamation point. Spooky, scary emoji scream face. And then it's a link to a Sandy Hook conspiracy YouTube video.
Not a good look for our lovely Kentucky muffin. But I didn't realize that this was pre-Vanderpump Rules era, Brittany.
Well, I think that that makes it even more sinister. Because this was like before anyone was tracking what she was believing.
What she was all about. Yeah, they didn't vet her that much. It's also crazy that this show is just a world where like anyone can just like go on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Like I feel like other shows and even like The Valley is like that. Like there are hangers on within the community that have now found themselves like at the center Mic'd. Of a show.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, this is the only reality show I know of. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the only one where this kind of shit goes down.
When James is actually one of the best casting directors Vanderpump has.
Mm-hmm.
He got us
Raquel.
Raquel and Allie, who I think is a great addition.
I like Allie, but she's also kind of bringing nothing to the table.
Oh, I disagree. See, I think she's playing that crucial role of needing an extra body in the scene, being a sounding board. Not being the center of anything, but helping to sort of reach across the aisle and continue the storyline, because I think that's the biggest thing they're running into this season, was that the first half of the season, nobody wanted to film together.
Mm-hmm.
And then production had to step in and say, we are doing a show. So yeah. Let's all get in the same room.
Imagine, like, it just shocks me that in this day and age, like, if you have a job, for example, you then think you're in a position to like not do your job, but also have the job that you have.
Well, don't you think that that's a bit of like the tick, 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 tick? I literally just turned into Nancy Pelosi talking about TikTok. The TikTok trajectory of life that so many people think is plausible.
Say more.
Just sort of like, if I just put up content all the time, then I won't have to work. If I just befriend these people, then I'll end up getting mic'd and like be on the show. It's the same.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I'm talking about people, like cast members who have been on for years thinking like, oh, now we get to call the shots and we're going to say what we want to do and what we don't want to do. And like, we know better than the people making this show. Like, and also not understanding, like, you're on a show, like you have to film. Like, I'm sorry that you all are kind of garbage people who like fuck each other over and ruin each other's lives. But like, you're on Vanderpump Rules. So show up and do the job. It's just crazy. That's always, and for them to not put together, like, we did that, like, we started to do this and, like, Resist in season 7, and then we almost got canceled. So, like, don't you think that there would be some sort of, like, reflective pattern recognition where it's like, okay, like, I know this is hell, but we just have to do it.
It was interesting to hear Jax, I think it was on that first episode of The Valley, talk about how Vanderpump was the best job ever and he lost it. And Brittany lost it and Kristen lost it. Like, their whole livelihood got taken away from them.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe they need to get a little fearful of thinking, like, if you don't clock in, like Lala does, if I do say so.
I know.
Then we're going to maybe have to recast.
It's just, like, nutty. I mean, it never ceases to amaze me how, like, dumb these people truly are. Like, that they just can't get it together and, like, do the job. Or, like, when given an inch of, like, fame or money or anything, they then decide to, like, immediately turn and bite the hand that feeds them. I guess that's, like, just the human way of doing things, but it also is just crazy to me.
It's crazy
that they, and also, like, that they think that they, I mean, I don't know what goes through their heads.
I think they think that they've been on the show a long time and they feel really safe, which is why, if you had listened, which I know you have, some of the episodes of Rachel Goes Rogue, Rachel talks about how, since some of the more seasoned members of the cast were kind of lazy, it was the newer cast members who had to sort of work for screen time and that sort of thing and had to listen to the producers. Whereas if you've been on the show for as many seasons as the show's been on,
you're coasting.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that is what happened at the first part of the season, but I think that it's picking up.
Yeah, I think it's picking up too. I would have loved to be a fly on the wall for that, like, all hands on deck meeting where a producer was like, you guys need to get your shit together and, like, we have a show to make.
Why didn't they film that?
Because I think about that a lot since that Tom Sandoval article came out.
And what's your theory?
I mean, I think it now seems that the fear of God was put into them a little bit.
Definitely. But, like, I want to see that. I want that,
yeah, I mean,
footage.
I
want to
see now how, like, behind the scenes. I mean, I think that the after show is oftentimes better than the actual show.
Agree.
Because they're talking about, like, what happens and there's, like, an acknowledgement that they're on a show somewhat. And I do think they need to, like, break the fourth wall on Vanderpump Rules more.
I have a theory that the entire cast went in for contract renegotiations after Scandoval. We'll get there. And they then threw in the Peacock bonus talking head show as a way to get them paid more, but get more out of them.
Mm-hmm. Probably.
Just something I thought of when I was on an edible.
Yeah, that's smart.
Thank you.
Whoever did that at Peacock, you did something right.
It's so good. And I don't know if everyone knows this, but Summer House also started an after show.
Oh, wow.
They're only two or three episodes in on it. I think they saw what it was doing for VPR and they said,
smart.
Get the kids in here.
I don't care about these people going on podcasts and, like, talking about what happens. Like, I don't care, like,
time for that.
I want, like, just a very succinct area where they comment on what happened after the fact, like, talk shit about each other, stir up more drama, and then, like, propel us towards a hopefully explosive reunion. And they're doing that.
Jackson, Brittany, and the anti-gay pastor.
So, what was this? Season 8?
Brittany and Jax are engaged. It's a great idea. Everybody thinks, yes, make it official. It's going to turn out wonderful.
They decide to get married at the Kentucky Castle, and they hired a pastor named Ryan Dotson, who, I guess, his Facebook behavior was unearthed, and he had been going on, like, anti-gay and anti-trans tirades.
I have the tweet. This pastor on February 24th, 2015 says, the devil wants to legalize sin. Just because it's legal, that doesn't make it right, all caps, exclamation points. How wicked is our nation becoming? It's pretty a pretty clear stance.
Yeah.
And then Brittany was like, I've known him, my family, he's been our pastor. I've never known him to be like this. And I do not agree.
Yeah, and I remember they tried to bring this up on camera, but this was when Jax was getting too big for his britches, so he would shut down that kind of thing. And so it never got to have, like, its real moment. I don't think he ended up, like...
No, Lance Bass did.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So they really got to the PR work, and they said, how can we change the narrative? And they said, who's the gayest person we know?
Lance Bass.
And now he shall marry us. And look how that's turned out.
Let's talk about LVP versus the service industry.
Let's.
Minimum wage.
So in 2021, West Hollywood was proposing to raise the minimum wage to $17 and something cents.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, if you're a business owner, restaurant business owner in West Hollywood, that would affect your bottom line. And LVP showed up at a digital town hall meeting to express that she does not agree with said hike for the employees. Wage yeah. hike for the employees.
And she went on camera at this town hall meeting, which then got sent out to various news websites, basically begging them to like not raise the minimum wage, saying it would be counterproductive. And it was just like a very interesting pull back the curtain of how she like goes to bat for her employees.
Listen, I understand the domino effect of the minimum wage being raised. If you're a business owner, you then have to increase the prices of the on the menu. You know, you have to probably, a lot of businesses ended up having to reduce the amount of employees they have. It's now actually 19 something an hour in West Hollywood. So not only did this pass, but it actually is now $2 higher than it was discussed in 2021. But it's just, I don't know if Lisa Vanderpump is the right representative for this conversation when her entire forward-facing brand is that of living in the lap of luxury. Mm-hmm. And I understand what she's saying, and she has a right to say it, but I just think that I would have maybe done a bit more of like a behind the scenes.
Yeah, I certainly would have been, would not have been pleading on camera.
No.
No.
I would not have. But it doesn't matter because it happened, it was passed, and like I said, it's now $2 more than it was initially meant to be. And Pump is no longer serving. Well, actually, it is, but it has moved into TomTom.
Yeah.
We know they're not spending that much money on a chef.
And certainly not spending that much money on food.
That part.
So, yeah, that was a real faux pas.
That's actually one of my favorite scandals on this list.
Mm-hmm. Mine too. Another scandal that's been on my mind a lot since going to Germany specifically is I found myself traveling, soaking up a lot of like World War II information, visiting like museums and trying to learn a lot about like how the Nazis came into power essentially. And then in the back of my mind, the entire time I was traveling, I just was at a loss and could not stop thinking about Stassi Schroeder going to Paris with Kristen Doty and Rachel O'Brien and Instagram storying a post of the three of them in which she captioned Rachel, criminal chic, Dodie, Tupac chic, and herself, Nazi chic.
Is that because she's wearing like a pageboy cap?
Yes, she's dressed like an SS officer. Then when people were like, what the fuck? She deleted it and then reposted the same picture. And she was like making it more appropriate, or like an appropriate redo. And she left the two girls the same. And then she said hashtag Elsa from Indiana Jones chic, who is a Nazi in that movie. Who's like a blonde, a beautiful blonde Nazi, but a Nazi nonetheless. And I was just like, I just kept thinking about how stupid that was.
Idiotic. One has to be to think that that's even remotely something you should put on the internet.
I don't know. The problem with Stassi is like, I think in order to be truly like subversive or provocative, you also have to understand what it is that you're making fun of or like subverting. And she doesn't know that. She just says like, oh my God, I'm wearing this like fucking hat. Like I look like a chic Nazi, like I'm Nazi chic, and like doesn't understand. Like, I think there's a version of a person who could do that. And like, I don't know, Nazi chic, but like
have a level of intelligence to make a joke,
something satirical.
That's right.
And she doesn't have that level of intelligence. She truly is like an ignorant bitch. And so when she does shit like that and then gets in trouble for it, or when she does shit like that, that's why she gets in trouble for it.
Well, there was that. Then there was, let's not forget the...
Oh, her key rings.
Well, yes.
Her Instagramming her initials all the time, being like SS.
No, I don't know about that.
Oh, yeah. She was doing that a lot, I think, over that trip.
As in
like SS. Like, I'm truly just...
She was like, I'm blonde hair and blue eyes. I'm going to lean in.
Yeah.
Like Aryan Nation style.
Schroeder, I guess, is like I would say it's probably a German last name.
So she also on her podcast had comments about hashtag me too that were.
Oh, yeah. I remember
there
that.
There was that. Then she also had like some really horrific commentary around the Oscars So White controversy. It's really kind of a little bit repetitive.
This was when she was in her white person flop era over and over and over, but really thinking that she was doing something and then finding herself in more and more hot water every time until it finally exploded in the firing.
That's right.
The mass like VPR firings.
Yep, which is when her and Kristen went on a podcast and talked about how they called the cops on Faith Stowers. Stowers?
Mm-hmm. Stowers.
On Faith Stowers. And unfortunately, the internet lives forever.
Again, people going on podcasts saying things that they shouldn't be saying. So yeah, did Stassi learn from her mistakes? Probably not.
You think? I always give the people the benefit of some sort of opportunity to learn and grow from their mistakes. And I would like to think so.
Yeah, I guess.
She's a mother of two now. She opted not to do the Valley, which shows growth.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I'm not an apologist by any means. I think that at any age, to think that that's appropriate thing to say in any capacity, like that would not be my journey. But yeah. I hope that, I mean, that would be great if it was a teachable moment and then you can just like go on and become like a nicer, kinder person.
Yeah. Unfortunately for me, I read Off With Her Head or Off With My Head.
Oh, no.
I know.
And
it seems like she kind of understands, but then also I think there is a level of not really understanding.
I got the same impression when Kristen spoke to it on the Valley. I was actually astounded at how not gracefully she tackled the topic. I just thought, what? I actually kind of loved it because it was just not rehearsed at all. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think most people, when having an opportunity to speak to something that was so widely known, obviously to the Vanderpump audience, and this is your opportunity to sit and look at the camera and speak to it, to do it kind of sloppily was... I just was like, okay, that's how we're gonna... She was like, it was the worst thing that has ever happened to me.
Yeah, and that was the same kind of thing and off with my head, which like, I always thought that they should have been kept on the show to have to like answer for their actions. And like, I would have as a viewer loved to see them navigate the fallout around that. I understand like why they were fired at that time, but I don't know. It's like interesting. I don't know how much growth you can really do as like a public figure of their ilk when something like that happens.
I know. I just always want to give people the benefit of the doubt, but I agree with you.
Mm-hmm. I think just you're kind of like stunted after a while.
So true.
Yeah.
And now Faith is coming back in the fold. Not only is she, and we'll get to this in a minute, is she starring in a Randall Emmett film?
No.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Hold on. I gotta pull the link. She's announced her role in Cash Out 2 High Rollers, a sequel directed by fellow Vanderpump Rules alum Randall Emmett. John Travolta stars in the heist film, and Stowers went toe-to-toe with the legend in her role.
Wow. I can't believe Randall's still making movies.
Honestly, that was my first thought as well. And then she has launched a podcast called The Frequency with a creative partner of hers, in which she is spilling the tea on her Vanderpump situation. And she is suing, is she suing Bravo?
She's suing NBC Universal and producers. NBC Universal, Bravo, and producers for racist harassment and retaliation using Bethany's lawyers.
We got to remember these people's names to know to look for them. It's Brian Friedman and Mark Goregos are the lawyers behind all of these Bravo lawsuits. Brian and Mark, put it to memory, because I feel like we're going to be seeing a lot more.
Damn. She says that she was only paid $5,000 for being in the fourth season of Vanderpump Rules, and then nothing afterwards.
Was that her first season?
I think so.
That was the Jax.
No, Jax, that came about in season 6.
Oh, so she was paid.
I guess she was just like paid around $5,000 to like be on the show.
But that is normal for, oh, because usually it's like if you're friends, you're just friend of in the background, mm-hmm. whatever. And then you start at something like that. What's unfortunate is she was kind of a big player in one of the big storylines around two of the main characters and didn't get compensated for that, I would imagine. And that's where it gets murky. And it's a bit of a Rachel situation.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm all for Faith coming out on top, getting cast in a Randall Emmett original.
I mean, like, babe, aim higher.
It's
the messiness levels, like, truly anyone involved with the show cannot climb out of the hole that is Vanderpump Rules.
Yeah, they're like swimming in a pumptini and they can't get out.
Like, I get wanting to like stick it to Lala, but like, then you're gonna align yourself with literally someone who I know both things can be true, but it kind of is like, you're going to come at NBC Universal with all this shit, even though LA Times article came out about Randall and all the shit that he was doing, which is disgusting. And then you're going to align yourself with that person.
That's a very fair point.
It calls into question a bit, like, it kind of discredits you a little bit.
I agree. I see that.
I understand, like, do the lawsuit and do what needs to happen in order to get yours. And then I guess you can go off and do whatever you want. Literally, like, go make a movie with Harvey Weinstein. But to do that at the same time, I just feel like, is it really, you really want to be in a movie that bad?
I mean, what's up with John Travolta doing a Randall Emmett movie?
I don't know.
Like, that's my side question.
It's very strange.
Does he need to be doing that?
I don't know. Well, the business model, I think, is that Randall can get these, he gets foreign distribution. So the big name actors that he gets, like a Bruce Willis or John Travolta, get a $2 million payday to work like 5 or 6 days, or maybe like 1 or 2 days. So they say yes, because it's like, oh, I get $2 million and I have to work 6 days.
Fair.
And like, then they're billed, they're used to like sell the international distribution. So it is like really good paydays for them. And then I guess like whatever for everyone else.
I just, I'm all about like preserving the legacy. And I just don't know if John Travolta needs to add a Randall Emmett original to his body of work.
Yeah, I mean, his legacy is like slowly circling the drain.
Well, I don't worry, I put on The People versus OJ Simpson this weekend just for a walk down memory lane. Mm-hmm. And I forgot about John Travolta's tour de force as Robert Shapiro.
Oh yeah, true. Speaking of faith, the Jackson Faith scandal was one of my favorites of all time.
To this day, the details of this blow my mind.
Nothing. This was the most classically Vanderpump Rules thing to ever take place. Jax Taylor cheated on Brittany Cartwright with their co-host Faith Stowers. And apparently Faith was watching an elderly hospice patient. And Jax came to where Faith was and they had sex within the premises of this, like, essentially dying elderly woman.
Hospice woman.
And that is how, like, that came out on the show. And then Faith was kind of nowhere to be found after that. I guess, like, was dismissed or fired or wasn't volunteering to be on the show at that point. So she was not in the mix anymore, which, by the way, I think that, because I think she was dating Max for a second.
Lala's first season, Faith and Max were hanging out. Because so, remember, it was sort of a fierce foursome of James, Lala, Max, and Faith.
So I think that Lisa, like, kind of cock blocked Faith from like being on the show because of that relationship. Mm. Is my like conspiracy theory.
Okay.
Anyways, yeah, nothing is more Vanderpump Rules to me than a fucking next to a dying woman.
And it's true. And then just as like a little cherry on the sundae of the woman in hospice and fucking, you have a recording of Jax talking about how he doesn't want to marry Brittany, and then they put it on the speaker at a party for all of them while they're all hammered to listen to. Peak.
Yeah.
Vanderpump Rules scandal. And
then on top of that, Brittany took Jax back and then married him.
And had his child.
And had a kid with him, which is also peak Vanderpump Rules. The whole thing, it was just like, this is poetry at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, it's like the fact that things devolved to where they did was never like a shocking thing. I was like, these people are garbage. Like, that's the whole reason that you watch them.
Right. They're garbage people with authentic friendships. Mm-hmm. That's why I watch it. I think that's the sweet spot, because reality TV holds court for a lot of garbage people. But the thing that sets Vanderpump apart is the authentic relationships. And therefore, when people actually have known each other for a decade plus and have been in each other's lives and dated one another and lived together, and there's that foundation of an actual relationship, and then they're garbage people to one another, and those, you know, circling the friend group, that's why you have the sweet spot that it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this was touched on in the Tom Sandoval article in the LA Times, or was it New York Times? In the New York Times. But the idea that we haven't really had people who were filmed in their 20s move into their 30s and 40s on camera.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the way that Vanderpump has followed these people from their restaurant jobs into getting married and making babies and all of that. So it's sort of a different representation of that medium. So I think that's the other added glory of the show.
Speaking of Randall Emmett,
so much to say.
He really came into the mix in a major way, like with someone that we thought we would never get to know, then did get to know him, and then was like gone just as quickly as he came in. But one of the best things he brought to the mix during his tenure of Vanderpump Rules was his feud with 50 Cent.
This was the first thing I thought of when thinking of this haul.
Mm-hmm.
Never forget Fofty.
So 50 Cent had loaned Randall $1 million and then accused Emmett of not paying him the remaining balance of his $1 million loan. Then 50 Cent publicly threatened Randall with physical violence. He was making memes. He was coming for Lala, which I thought was like a little bit of a cheap shot. And then he kept threatening and said, money by Monday, money by Monday. And it was like, what, like a Thursday or a Friday? The heat was on. Then Randall took also to social media to apologize and say he would get the money. And it was just like kind of amazing, because Randall was always painted as this like very wealthy, like Hollywood producer type. And respected. This was like very seedy.
What, didn't he also post a picture of him hooked up to like a heart monitor and sort of tried to play the like, I'm ailing?
Well, he tried to,
how could you come for me at this moment?
I think he was like trying to say like, now you've stressed me out so much that I'm like, I'm unwell.
That's loser behavior.
I know. Very loser behavior.
I'm sorry, Fofty. What was the $250,000 loan meant to be for?
I have no idea. I mean, I know Randall's like a big gambler, so maybe it was something with gambling.
50 Cent on April 28th, 2019. Oh, we're almost at the anniversary of the Fofty scandal. 50 Cent created I'm Sorry Fofty t-shirts. He sold 10,000 t-shirts in one day.
Holy shit.
The precursor to Send It to Daryl, some might say.
Mm-hmm.
This is where Lala learned from the best. I would love for nothing more than to see one of those t-shirts turn up in like a Goodwill pile.
I bet they have...
I would
it's found gold. Themselves in a Goodwill pile. I think there's probably 10,000 t-shirts in like Ghana
for
right
sure
now, littering the beaches.
Absolutely. And then on August 1st of 2022, all was well again when Lala visits 50 Cent on a movie set after her split from Randall to show solidarity with 50.
I love that.
Yeah, at all. It's a happy ending. Really ties it in a
moment.
Bow. Yeah.
Yeah. And 50 got his $750,000 from Rand, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
So all was right in the world once again.
That was this one was a delight, I have to say. It just all around, it gave us like real time drama.
Mm-hmm. It gave us something for a brief moment.
Which is really all we need in this moment in time. And then obviously I'm sure our audience is very familiar with the Randall Scandal documentary, but just a few key points. One of the most interesting tidbits to me is that the character of Turtle on Entourage, based off of Randall.
Yeah.
Which says so much.
That told you everything you needed to know mm-hmm. about who this man was.
And then basically he just sounds like your quintessential misogynist, drug addicted Hollywood boss
mm-hmm.
who has no kindness and is up their own ass and is a nightmare to work for.
Yeah. And also makes piece of shit movies.
Right. And then there's the whole arm of the story in which he very clearly was taking advantage of the fact that Bruce Willis was not in a state to really consent to doing movies or was being handled by people who didn't have his best interests at heart. And Randall definitely seems like one of these people. And he was doing movies where he wasn't able to learn the lines, so he had an earpiece in his ear. He just was not in the best health even before, you know, it was known that he with the health issues he was dealing with. But yet Randall was using his name to do these international sales. It just sounds, you're not a good guy.
No.
You're just not a good guy. And you're not the, you know, prank loving, pickleball toting guy that you
fun loving
framed yourself as on our sweet Vanderpump Rules television program. Really thought you pulled one over on us, but sadly, the LA Times begs to differ.
Yeah. Let's go in a different direction.
Let's. We gotta clear the Randall energy.
I'm remembering Not About the Pasta Gate, another thing that kept people's tongues wagging for a really long time and ended up being one of the most anticlimactic like things mm-hmm. ever.
What was the name of that restaurant? It was on Fairfax. It was
like the chicken place.
Fried chicken place.
Yeah. I think it's still there.
I don't think it's there anymore. Oh, Sweet really? Chicks.
Sweet
Chicks.
That's
what its name is. I think it closed. I could be wrong.
Okay.
But Lala and James got into it at Sweet Chick over a different event in which Lala ate Rachel's pasta. And the speculation was that pasta was code word for cocaine.
Mm-hmm. And then it came out via Raquel's podcast mere weeks ago, I believe, that it really was just
pasta.
Pasta. It was what, like the angel hair cheka or something like that? The way these people eat at that restaurant to this day
blows my mind.
Haunting. But yeah.
So it was a big nothing burger.
But also it's again like a lesson of these people. There are no code words for anything. You have to be kind of smart to have a code word and like figure out like your way around something. I think it's very like, I don't think they're code wording.
It would be so cool if they were though.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what if something about her was code word for some, like, co-op situation that was this whole other business and it was really a front for a completely other, like, illegal operation? Like, they were doing designer handbag dupes.
I know, but you would have to be, again, very smart to do something like that. And that's, like, even when people were, like, maybe Scandoval was just, like, an inside job and like a plot to just get ratings. I was like, no, you again, you need to be dealing with smart people that could actually think ahead to do this. Like the best thing about all the people on this show is that they've fallen into this world that they find themselves in.
Completely.
And like they're the bad things that they do to each other and the people in their lives makes the show better and so good.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of stupidity, I would be remiss not to bring up one element of Scandoval, which all of us know about it. We don't need to really get into it on this haul, but I think something that's been highly overlooked is the reveal of Tom cheating on Ariana with Raquel being that he recorded Rachel without her consent. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's talked about enough.
Yeah.
That is, talk about loser behavior. If you're a grown man and you are operating in that way and you think that that is a good idea, B, at all appropriate, you're a fucking idiot. And yeah, we obviously know
he's the dumbest man alive.
Right. But just like the fact that I feel like all these people are protecting him, whether it be producers, whether it be Bravo, whether it be I don't know what. And obviously this is being acknowledged in the lawsuit. Like, I don't really think Ariana's at fault for sending it to herself, allegedly, or whatever the case may be. But I do think that, I mean, it's criminal behavior, but it's like he's so dumb he didn't even see it as such. And the time.
Yeah, I understand why he did something like that. And I think part of like revenge porn is like it's like a twofold thing where you've both recorded someone without their consent or like, and did it with nefarious intention. And I don't think anyone was like nefarious. I think what happened is he recorded it just thinking like,
you look so hot right now.
Yeah, I just want to have this really like spank bank kind of thing. And then she found it, texted it to herself, and then probably texted it to other people being like, what the fuck? And then none of them ever thought like, this is revenge porn or like we shouldn't be texting this to anyone.
But they obviously clocked that that wasn't a good thing because it ended up not making the edit of the Scandoval episode. They don't say what the video is.
But they probably can't because of like legal liability. Like the NBC Universal and Bravo and / Peacock legal department is like, you can't even say that that happened because if you do, then you're admitting culpability for this thing that is considered revenge porn legally.
Which is why it just seems like they're protecting him. They don't want him to look bad. They don't want to be responsible for using the show as a platform to even say that this is actually what happened. I just like, it's bad.
Yeah.
It's not good.
That's what happens though when you give these people money and fame.
Exactly.
It's also not the first fucked up sex tape to occur in this universe. Because way back when, Stassi made like a masturbation video, sent it to Frank, and then Frank was threatening to release it or sell it to have it released. And Lisa had to buy back the sex tape from Frank.
Wasn't it for $800?
Yeah, it was for a paltry sum. Oh, no. It was between $700 and $900. And so that was very nice of LVP to do that. But also it's just crazy to think that this show started out in an era where like you could do that to someone.
It had just like a different lens around it than it would now.
I mean, that's like how every like sex tape was brokered like back in the day. It was just like someone had a tape of you and then could sell it. And then you would just be like, oh, great. There's like a sex tape of me.
Damn.
It's just crazy.
On the lighter side of things, did we talk about Kristen and Jack's fucking to drive?
We certainly didn't talk about that. So The other mind-blowing thing just about this cast in general is like how every single person has engaged in an affair. So no one can throw stones at anyone else, yet they continue to throw stones. So you have Lala and Randall had an affair with each other. Tom and Ariana had an affair with each other. Kristen and Jax had an affair with each other. Am I missing anyone? I feel like I am.
Tom Schwartz
cheated on Katie a bunch. Sheena and Eddie, an affair. Everyone's hands are a little bit dirty. But yeah, it's a very scandal-ridden group.
It's a scandal-ridden group. Thank goodness for that, actually, because watching these fools brings me joy on a deep level. Oh, wait, what about the cars driving into Pump?
Just after 2 p.m. during a Sunday brunch in West Hollywood, a gray Ferrari smashed into the entrance of reality star Lisa Vanderpump's restaurant, Pump. One woman was sent to the hospital with minor cuts. No one else was hurt. The Ferrari driver, I think, just said he was cut off and then accidentally drove into the restaurant.
I could see that. It's a weird round turn. Corner.
Yeah. I think it happened on January 6th, 2020. A harbinger of...
Things happening.
Yeah, but I just always thought it was like right before Vanderpump Rules was going to premiere. And so I just always thought that Lisa had orchestrated a little crash of sorts. Because I've always had theories that Lisa has orchestrated things like fires for insurance payouts.
Well, as Erica Jane would say, she's a sniper on the side.
So, yeah.
Wow, what a haul.
What a haul.
Makes me really fired up for the rest of the season.
I know. I hope that it continues to slay.
I hope that... I don't ever not want these people on my TV.
I know. I need some form of them. I was thinking earlier today. I was like, I hope that we like see them in the nursing home.
Yeah. That would be great.
Yeah.
And would be great for sup.
It would be amazing for sup.
Love it. All right. Well...
Guys, thank you for hauling with us. And until next time,
stay niche. Bye. Too Niche is created and hosted by Laura Marie Shainhalls and me, Elizabeth Cott.
Today's episode was edited by AJ Mosley. If you loved today's episode, please give us a 5-star A+ rating in Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcast audio. And be sure to subscribe so that you never miss an episode. And be sure to smash the follow on Instagram and TikTok at this_is_too_niche.
One of my favorite big ticket investment items is from Higher Dose. From infrared sauna blankets to PEMF mats, their science-backed tech helps you sweat and recharge and glow like never before. I am such a fan. I truly lie on my PEMF mat every night. I also love my sauna blanket. They are just incredible items. And because you're a Too Niche listener, you get 15% off your order with code NICHE15 at checkout. So head over to higherdose.com, use code NICHE15, and elevate your wellness routine today.